Welcome to the special edition of the Uptime Wind Energy Podcast. I'm your host, Alan Hall, along with my co-host, Joel Saxon. Today, we're joined by Glenn Aiken, president and co-founder at LiftWorks, and Elka May, managing director at LiftWorks. Based in Canada, LiftWorks is leading the way in developing craneless wind turbine repair systems. As many of you know, turbine repairs have traditionally depended upon large cranes that are difficult to transport and are vulnerable to wind delays. And this is where LiftWorks comes in because they are disrupting the status quo. They have pioneered ingenious, smaller lifting solutions that are cost-effective, efficient, and eco-friendly. Glenn and Elko, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, thanks very much, Al.
So as we all know, doing major component exchanges is a difficult task, or doing a rotor, removing the rotor, those kind of things, usually involves massive cranes. And in the United States, and even in Europe, at times, getting a hold of a crane big enough to do the job is, one, expensive, and two, usually there's a narrow window in which you can actually get access to that crane. This is where LiftWorks comes in, and I really want to hear about, it's really a couple of different things you work on. Obviously, the gen hook and the rotor hook, but now you're into offshore. So I think that's a cool offering because there's going to be a lot of work offshore in the United States coming up in which it's going to need help. So I want to hear about what you guys are seeing out in the world and sort of how LiftWorks fills that void.
If I look back 10 years, because I've been working in wind energy for around 20 years, we've seen a massive rapid growth in the size and weight of wind turbine components. We've also seen a huge volume of wind turbines installed over the last decade. And quite frankly, crane requirements have also had to, increase just to meet the demand. Both the demands in height and weight, but also just the volume demand. Myself, I came out of the heavy crane industry. I worked there since the early 90s and really started to see customers were in a lot of pain over crane costs and also crane logistics. And so we tried to come up with a solution that would solve a lot of that pain. And what we're seeing now is there's a huge transition going on, especially in North America at the moment, where we're seeing that probably 50% now of major component replacements are being done with up tower cranes as compared to traditional cranes.
I mean, it makes absolute sense, right? So you guys have developed this technology based on seeing the struggles of asset owners and other, ISPs and stuff in the world because, hey, we've got to swap this one component out. We've got a crane, over here. It may cost you 50 or 75. I've seen insurance cases where it's $100,000 to mobilize a crane, right? And that's just to get it there. And once you get it there, then it's day rate after day rate. And then if you get a little bit of wind and it's stand down. And so those are things that are painful, but it also affects, the business interruption and getting those assets back up in order, getting that energy onto the grid. So it affects all of us. It's not just a little bit of a money problem for one person. You guys have developed your own solutions in-house. If you need to make adjustments, someone has a specific problem, there's a new model out or something of that sort, you're engineering it yourselves. But the way you guys got to being a company like this is seeing the pain points of the wind industry and adjusting to it.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, for me personally, right before starting LiftWorks, I met a customer that was in a tremendous amount of pain. Having just exchanged a gearbox on a GE turbine, so something that's being done every day, but he kind of walked me through the woes of this particular gearbox exchange, where it wasn't just winter time. He was on a wind farm where they had like close to 20 feet of snow accumulation over the course of the winter, so it's not just the getting the crane mobilized. It was also blowing about $250,000 worth of snow just to get the crane in there. It goes on and on and on. And at the time I was the R&D director at Mammoet, which is a Dutch global heavy lift contractor. And he said to me, he says, Glenn, can't you figure out a way to exchange a gearbox without a big crane? And that question really had a huge effect on me. Yeah, why not? This customer clearly wanted that and needed that. And just thought about the scalability of that. If it can solve his problem, it could solve the problem for a lot of other people as well.
Your technology, I mean, you guys are using it onshore, offshore, and Elko will touch on the offshore side of things as well. But you're designed to solve problems. One of the ones that always comes to my mind, and this is the exact thing you talked about, I'm from the northern part of the United States, up in Wisconsin. I deal with road bans and freeze and all these different things, right? And or you get into the western states, like in the BLM territory, where you have certain bird species that you can't, you know, or raptor seasons, you can't go on, you can't leave the pad. Well, I don't need to leave the pad with the LiftWorks crane. I can roll up with just a couple pickups or bigger trucks. But I don't have a, you know, to put crane mats out and all these different things. So you guys are solving a lot of problems here. In the onshore world, this is a curiosity and so for people listening as well. When you show up with a crane, a big crane, you show up with sometimes 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 truckloads of stuff and moving materials and mats. And you have to sometimes mobilize other equipment just to build the equipment. When you guys show up on shore, what does that look like with, hey, LiftWorks is here, they're rolling into site. What kind of equipment do you show up with? How many trucks does it take?
It also varies. You know, small repairs require less equipment. Larger repairs require more equipment. I think our smallest footprint is if we're just doing something as simple as a generator exchange. For a generator exchange, it's one truck. And it's a truck with legal dimensions. It's just a single 40-foot container on the back. And in that container, we've got all the tools, all the interface equipment, and all the crane equipment to exchange a generator. You don't need any permits because it's, you know, nothing's oversized, nothing's overweight. So we can just mobilize and go. And, you know, and for customers, they can just call us up. And if they want that service, it's like ordering pizza. Like it really is that simple. And we just have to get in, get a driver and hop in the truck and drive to that site. And what's interesting, when it's that minimalistic, we can drive from Massachusetts to California in 4 days and we can still do the job more cost effectively and more timely than local contractors can do in California, just because we're coming with so little equipment and we're so nimble. For bigger repairs, like if you're doing something like pitch bearings where the rotor has to come down, we still need a small tailing crane because you have to trip the rotor. So you are coming with a small crane, but that small crane is usually just a couple of trucks. We're coming with a lot of other ground tooling like hub stands, et cetera. So I think at the very most, like all the crane equipment up tower and down tower might be about 10 trucks. But by comparison, if you're doing it traditionally, you would be there with maybe 25 trucks, or more. Like what we're seeing on really big turbines now, it could be 50 trucks. You know, if you see some of these big crawler cranes coming with all kinds of super left counterweight and everything else, like it's for big turbines that the repairs require big cranes.
And I think that's a key pillar of our business, that we show up with maybe a fifth or even a tenth of the equipment that you would need with traditional cranes. And that's true for both onshore and offshore, where, you know, you need to mobilize huge vessels, huge jackups, huge cranes to change a really small part. that's just not right. If you can minimize that, then there's always a good business case behind it.
Okay, Elko. So let's talk about that offshore game a little bit. Now we're sitting in North America. Glenn, you're in North America as well. So our offshore industry is very early game, right? I know I've just seen some videos from South Fork, and you look at it, you're like, oh, fantastic. We've got some wind farms, some utility scale wind farm out there, but it's just one right now, right? They're coming. Now, you guys over in the North Atlantic, Northern Europe, you've been doing offshore wind for a long time. So you guys have got quite a bit of experience over there. There's a big problem with vessel availability across the globe for the wind industry. We know this. Anything heavy lift is, you're booked out. So if you have a generator go down or you need pitch bearings, main bearings, something like that on an offshore turbine, you're struggling right now. So the LiftWorks solution, you guys can work offshore. How do you mobilize offshore? What kind of vessel do you need?
Yeah, so we have a bit of a threefold strategy, increasing in complexity. So on the more near shore wind farms that are fairly shallow water, we can use very small jackups, which are used in the civil industry to build jetties and quay walls and these kind of things. So they are operating in a different market. And there are, you know, upwards of 50 operating all over Europe. So it's a different availability, different price level. They're very simple, very basic units. No no propulsion, no nothing. And then basically we make a little table next to the turbine, and we operate as if it's onshore, right? So we make a little stable area, and we just do the same as onshore. So that's the first step. Second step is that we're developing solutions working from floating vessels. So instead of using a jacket, we do not touch the seabed anymore. No risk of cable damage, no interaction with the seabed whatsoever. So that will be a vessel coming alongside the bottom fixed turbine and working from there. That's the development we're doing at the moment. And then as a third, there's floating to floating. So there are a number of floating wind farms out there in Europe here. They can have issues. And our tower crane technology is also very suitable to solve these issues in situ. So changing out major components, you know, keeping the turbine where it's at, where it's moored, and where the electrical cables are connected, and they don't have to be towed back to shore. So that those three things we're working on, and the bottom fixed solutions will do the first projects this year.
So you can avoid the high wind situation where they had to tug those, tug all the floating turbines back to shore, which was super expensive, and it just seemed like a major problem. So that you're offering really innovative solutions. And I think if you're watching from the outside like me and you see LiftWorks, you think, well, all this stuff is modular and just bolt right on. But there's a lot of engineering that goes on behind the scenes. So if you're doing a GE 1.5 versus a Sierra or a Cypress turbine, each one of those requires some engineering. And this isn't like the OEMs are designing their turbines to adapt your equipment. You're actually doing all the engineering to adapt a crane onto their platform. You want to walk through that, Eiko, of what's going on there?
Yeah, sure. So we on new types of turbines that we want to service, we need to develop a system to open the roof, slide it back, gain access to the turbine. Normally with a mobile crane or an offshore crane, you can just lift the roof off. That's not the case in our situation. So we have to develop a roof sliding system. And then our cranes are generic, so they can fit on any turbine, but they need an interface to basically mount the crane onto the strong points in the nacelle. And we also develop those systems in-house by use of, for instance, 3D scans of the nacelles. We could go in and we could take critical measurements, and we can develop a crane interface. And that typically goes up in small pieces, and we then build a small crane, and the small crane builds a slightly bigger one. And like that, we like a Russian doll system, we can increase to any scale we want. And depending whatever is in there in the first place, like a chain hoist or a small internal service crane, we can start with 250 or up to 3 tons of lifting capacity to start with, and then go to the ultimate lifting capacity that we would need, which can be 80 tons, like we're operating now in North America for a Rotaroog, the latest generation.
That was one of my big questions, to be honest with you, with this thing. I was like, I don't know how you get the actual crane up there, but it makes absolute sense now. Like, we go up there with a small one, then we get a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger to what we need. Because when I'm like right next to your head, Elko, and in the screen here for our people that are actually listening, is a picture of the crane. And I'm looking at that thing going, that's not coming up the inside of the tower. There's no way. But then you can see a couple of different arms. It looks like there's like a 1, 2, 3. This one was smaller, probably got built first. Then number 2, and then number 3, and you guys kind of stepped it up as you went up. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, one of our clients recently called it the porcupine setup.
Hey, if it works.
That was a new definition to be, but it seems like a lot, but it's very efficient because the steps get bigger and bigger as the capacity grows. So for instance, the Rotaroog crane that we put up, it goes up in a single lift. So you go from 30-ton lifting capacity in one lift, you go to 80. So that's really quick and efficient.
Let's talk about this then. Glenn, I know you're located here in North America. You're up in Ontario, just west of Toronto. Elko, you're in The Hague, so you're taking on all the offshore stuff in Europe and some onshore stuff in Europe. Where are you guys operating at right now? Where do you have kit? Like, if someone needs to deploy, you can cover North America and Europe onshore and offshore? Or where else are you guys at?
Yeah, that's correct. And those are the two markets we're working in at the moment. We do get a lot of inquiries from other parts of the world, but you know, you can't be everything to everybody. And maybe in time we will expand to other continents and beyond. And certainly in our background, we all came from global companies. So we're certainly not afraid of that. But you have to work in small steps when you're growing a business. So yeah, today we have a presence in Europe, and in Europe we've only been operating for about 2 or 3 years, so it's still quite new. In North America, we've been operating for 8 years. I think we're in our 9th year now, so we have a much larger presence here. But yeah, because of the mobility and nimble nature of our equipment, we cover the whole continent. We have many teams working across North America at the moment, and we work everywhere from central Alaska down to, you know, the southern tip of Texas and east to Nova Scotia. Like, you name it, we work everywhere.
How many teams do you have right now?
Presently in North America, we have 6.
And because it's so efficient, they can really get in and out on MCEs, right? That's the whole game, is to be quick and efficient.
Yeah, that's right. Like, just as an example, like one of our gearbox teams right now, they were in California. They did a few jobs there back in January. Then they're up to Montana. Now they're down in Texas. They're heading further east. Actually, they're heading to your neck of the wood down. They're heading to Massachusetts shortly.
Ah, I think I know where that is.
Yeah. So it's a very different model than what people are used to using if they're using traditional cranes, because traditional cranes are so large that it doesn't really make economic sense to be mobilizing them across the country. So normally they have a hub and spoke model where they're mobilizing it from a central depot and they're demobilizing back to that depot. We don't do that. We only mobilize one way, and that's to get there. And then, you know, getting out of there, that's on the next job. So not only is it a way less mobilization cost to begin with, it's only a one-way mobilization because we don't have this hub and spoke model.
Yeah, let me touch on something there that you mentioned, because this is a value add for clients. I, in my past life, have been in a part of a lot of insurance cases, right? And I've done them in North Dakota and South Dakota, Montana, Minnesota in the wintertime. And this is what happens in reality sometimes. Okay, you have an issue where you need a crane, right? You may need a gearbox. You may need a blade swap. You need something like that. But it is now, say, October. And in October, you're like, you're just getting some snow. Then you get some weather. Nobody really wants to mobilize a big crane from the southern part of the states in that time, because it may sit on the site for a month without being able to be used because of the weather. So they're kind of scared of it. So they're like, you know what? We'll put it off. And then all of a sudden you end up with, like what you said earlier, $250,000 worth of snow, where the snow moving. And then it freezes up and they can't get the crane in there anyways. And then we get to spring. So that turbine sits down from October, right? Not spinning a lick. And then you get to the point where you're like, okay, it's getting to spring. We're tired of dealing with all these costs. Let's get a crane out here. And then all of a sudden you run into road bans. The frost starts coming out of the ground. You got another 6-week delay once you feel like the weather's actually nice, but then you got 6 weeks of delay until the frost comes out of the ground, until you can move anything heavy in there. So you end up having that turbine sit down from October to, man, sometimes April, May. And then the issue is not so much the damage that's done to the turbine, it's the business interruption cost, because that thing down can cost, if it was running, $1,500, depending on the megawatts, right? $2,000, $2,500, $4,000 a day in energy production. You can be crazy heights of costs for if it's an insurance case or if it's the asset owner. Someone has to eat that money. But you guys, if someone said, hey, it's October, yeah, we'll be there. We're in the United States. We're there within 4 days.
Yeah. And what we see in our business, like, there is no seasonality in our business. I mean, our customers, they see LiftWorks as a solution to plow through those off seasons and you know, to take care of the remote sites and the tough mobilization sites. And so we do all the toughest jobs. But we're also seeing the trend that you just mentioned about, you know, leaving things down for the winter and holding off until the spring. I think that trend is on the decrease. I think there's so much demand right now that it doesn't make as much sense to do that, because you may find that if you wait till the spring, not only have you taken a hit on production, but there aren't enough cranes to go around if everybody were to save up their work and do only summer work. So we're seeing now, especially with the big owners, they are very active in the winter. They are highly prioritizing up tower cranes in the winter for obvious reasons, higher wind speeds and more mobility, et cetera. Not dealing with snow and mud as much as you would with a traditional crane. We're busy 12 months a year. We do not hire seasonally. We are a full-time employer 12 months of the year.
So if you're an MCE or someone that has worked with cranes in the past and you're looking for a new job, LiftWorks, call them. This is something, it's a hot topic because the last few weeks we've been talking about at OMS, at Blades, everybody's talking people. What can be done? Well, if you're a company like LiftWorks, you're not hiring seasonal. You have no shoulder season.
We have never laid anybody off due to seasonality.
That's amazing.
You're working with the latest and most innovative technology in the business to do these exchanges. It's very safe. And you're learning new stuff, and we're continuously developing new services. So everybody that's part of our company is also part of these innovations.
So Glenn, how do people find LiftWorks? How do they contact you or Elko to get a connection and to get some work done this year?
In this day and age, you know, most of the inquiries come in, either on social media, on our LinkedIn page, or people look us up. You can find our phone number if you prefer to phone us. Just look at our number listed on our website. Or people will often just reach out to us personally, just personal messages on LinkedIn. You know, I'm present on LinkedIn. So is Elko. So if you want to reach out, if you have questions, you can. It's very easy to find us.
And we'll put all the contact information in the show notes. So when you hear this, just look in the show notes so you can reach Glenn and Elko directly. Guys, this has been fantastic. I've learned a tremendous amount here. LiftWorks is really changing the game across the world in terms of MCE and making turbines more efficient and operating for longer periods of time. So congratulations to both of you, and thank you for being on the program.
Yeah, thanks very much for having us, guys.
Thanks a lot.